Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycon, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Oh, merciful goodness, it is good to be back home. I have been out of the loop, off the radar, and in D.C. for the last 4 days. And what a trip it was. Thank you, first of all, thank you to every last one of you who took the time to handwrite a letter to your elected representatives, your senators, your members of Congress, and email them to me. I did, as you asked, I did deliver them to each and every office, and you have become more than just a philosophical supporter of the end of mountaintop removal in Appalachia. You are now actively in the fight, and I thank you. It was a very, very busy week. The days were simply packed. I was without internet at the hotel, and I'll tell you why. I could check my email on my cell phone periodically, but couldn't do much better than that. I couldn't do much more than that. But, when you check into a hotel room, they don't charge you extra for the towels. They don't charge you extra for, TP. They don't charge you extra for television, unless, of course, you're buying, those movies late at night. But for some reason or another, hotels have decided that the internet access in the year 2009 is some sort of luxury that they should be able to charge extra for, just like, $18 bottle of mineral water in the honor bar. No, we did not stay in a hotel with an honor bar, I assure you. But, I was there on somebody else's nickel. And I was not going to hang them out to dry to the tune of $50 per room for internet access for 4 days. So I apologize for being out of the loop, but that's why. And I was largely out of the loop on anything that I didn't see on Capitol Hill. But Agnes and I were there, and we took the whole fam damily with us. And we did what we went to do. It was inspiring. It was exhausting. It was occasionally frustrating, but the hard work put forth by the folks that we were with was, as it always is, inspiring beyond belief. The hard work of, and I'm going to call their names, the hard work of J.W. Randolph and Stephanie Pistello and Lenny Calm to get all this set up in advance for us, so that we could then do our hard work, was nothing if not inspiring. And it was indeed inspiring. So that is what we were doing. We drove up Monday. We did some briefing and teaching and training Monday night for those who had never done this stuff before. And then Tuesday we hit the ground running, and we worked congressional offices and administration offices Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then when we were done on Thursday, hot, tired, and exhausted, we climbed back in the vehicle and came home. And you know what? I found out something. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there is no way to get out of Washington, D.C. without eventually parking your car in a lane on an interstate somewhere. At least as far as I could tell. So, that... suffice to say, we pulled in here at midnight last night, which was not bad time, all in all. And we probably took a little, it took a little longer getting home because I can't, it drives me, it's like some sort of tick, if you will. It drives me crazy to go somewhere and drive past history and not stop and soak a little bit of it in. And so we, this time, I went home via a different route because it occurred to me that I might cut a few miles off, and I think I did. And we wound up driving past the battlefields for Spotsylvania Courthouse, Chancellorsville, and the Wilderness. And what a magnificent drive that was. And I did it because I thought of me at about the same age that Ferg is now, and how even though my parents were traveling on a much different and much more important mission, they found time to stop and show me historical sites when I was his age. And so Ferg has seen, the girls were asleep in the vehicle, but Ferg has seen, at least seen the Chancellorsville battlefield and has come home and begun to research it so that he can understand what happened there. I'm one of those people that can't go to a Civil War battlefield without getting a little choked up. But what a trip it was from the beginning to the end. You've heard me talk in I'll try to work this chronologically, but there's no guarantee. There's so much stuff to be gotten into. I gotta cram a week's worth of not talking into 3 hours tonight. Jiminy, this may be the mother of all filibobsters. But no, your calls are as always welcome at 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on, or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. BobKincaid@gmail.com. Learn it, know it, use it. But, on the way there, I couldn't resist pulling off of Interstate 64 at an exit in West Virginia called Sam Black Church. And you've heard me mention Sam Black in the past. He is one of my forebears. He is, he was the brother to one of my multi-great-grandmothers. And as we stood there on the stoop of the church, a lady came over from next door and let us in. And there hanging on the wall is a portrait of Sam Black. Sam Black was ironically named because Sam Black was a supporter of slavery. He was a supporter of the South. In fact, when they consecrated the Methodist Church there, Sam Black Church, you know, that takes a little bit of hubris, doesn't it? Not, you know, Jesus H. Christ Memorial Church or St. Luke or St. Paul or St. Thomas or St. God. Sam Black. When they consecrated the church in the early 1900s, the guy who donated the land for the church to sit on insisted that the stained glass over the doorway say Sam Black Memorial Methodist ME Church South. Yeah, he was one of those. My ancestor believed that people of darker skin tone were cursed by God to serve white people as part of the, and be owned by white people as part of the natural order of things. He was a great Christian, Sam Black was. And so now I find myself in the year 2009, sort of working, trying every day to work those demons out of my being. And do some sort of amends for the manifest harm that that man must have done. Preaching a hateful God, a bigoted God, a racist God, to a more than willing and accepting people. Learned a little bit more about my family. The generation previous, one of my multi-great grandfathers. Where'd the book go? There's the phone. I can't quit make ringing. I gotta figure out how the ringer works on that damn thing. Turns out that another two great grandfathers back, all these years, knowing a little bit about my own personal proclivities and my own nature, I've always figured there had to be some Irish in me. And now I know. Now I know. Scott's Irish, I've no doubt. But McClung. McClung. My Irish forebears. And I learned about that. So I had a teaching moment with the kids, telling them about their relative, the racist follower of the Prince of Peace. And that was the start of the trip. Once we got there, once we got onto Capitol Hill on Tuesday, I gotta tell you, Washington, D.C. right now, and I know, how could you tell it for different from any other day, Bob? But Washington, D.C. right now is positively awash in crazy. Bad crazy. It was Tuesday, in fact, when we took a little break between dropping off packets and meeting with legislative assistants and so forth. And the family and I walked across the street from the House office buildings to the little park that sits off to the side of the House side of the Capitol. And we were sitting there beneath the shade of a giant ash tree, and we watched people begin to gather not too far away, and there were television cameras and microphones, and of course that's like a moth, draws me like a moth to a flame. I gotta go see what's going on. The circus is in town, kids! And it was. I could feel waves of evil emanating toward me. Just like something out of, I don't know, the Lord of the Rings. And Frodo, put on the ring. Put on the ring, Bob. And I walked over and I see this silver-haired devil, impeccably dressed, with a bunch of men standing behind him. And people in lunatic T-shirts. And I recognized him on sight, because when you do what I do, you get to the point where you can spot crazy from a mile away without a spyglass. And it was Indiana's Mike Pence. And he was waxing crazy. I mean, he was in rare form. Talking into the microphone, surrounded by a bunch of men behind him. The fact that I've said now twice that there were a bunch of men behind him must tell you something about the issue he was talking about. Men. By the way, it's Front Porch Friday, so, you know, just sidle on up and grab the jug, pick up the banjo, whatever. Prop your feet up on the rail of the porch. a bunch of men standing behind him. And he was talking about how the government is now going to start paying for aborting our little unborn fetuses with that socialized health care. Yeah, really. And I saw some woman with a T-shirt that showed Barack Obama holding a shredded up little lifeless fetus, and it said, "The abomination in the eyes of the Lord." And I couldn't resist it, just walking past her. I turned to her and I said, "Lady, you're crazy, aren't you? I mean, you're just crazy." And just cruised on as she was... Because, she's another one of those that moves in her comfort zone. Where, but that testify, sister, testify about the abomination under the nostrils of the Lord. Crazy is loose on the hill. And they were everywhere. At one point, our children and I and Agnes had gone down to the Longworth cafeteria for a bite of lunch. Really, and let me tell you, this is our little food porn moment for the evening. The Longworth cafeteria in the Longworth House office building has some of the best macaroni and cheese I have ever eaten in my life. And mac and cheese is one of those comfort food kind of things. They got lots of stuff down there. But the mac and cheese was purely by accident. It was my side dish along with the collard greens with my lunch. And I went back for more. And the fam family reached over and also got a taste and went, "Wow, Dad, this is better than yours." So if you're ever there, get the mac and cheese. Screw everything else. Get the mac and cheese. But we, and this is fun. When I go on these trips, I pack suits and ties. Not as a matter of pretense, really. Trust me, I would rather have been in shorts, a T-shirt, and flip-flops than to have been in a suit and tie, no matter how tropical weight it was. Yeah, the marketing bastards. Tropical weight suits. Kiss my... but anyway, suit, tie, torture devices known as dress shoes on my feet. And hotter... Dear Jesus, hotter than a sauna in hell on Capitol Hill. And I'm not trying to be gross, but I sweat. I don't perspire. So we were sitting down in the cool of the, but I had a suit on. And it was a decent suit. It was a pin, let's see. No, it was a gray suit. It was the gray suit. With a pink shirt. I think pink shirts are all the rage on Capitol Hill these days. And a nicely striped tie. And we came up out of the elevator, and this woman comes at me with a microphone like some sort of bee after pollen, and sticks this microphone in my face and said, "What do you think of the president's health care plan?" I guess this, so I'm thinking, I get, and the kids are just sitting back there going, "Oh, Jesus, not now, please. Oh, lady, don't get him started." No, wait. I don't want to be at all disingenuous because, I would have just, in answer to the question, but it was the way she presented her thing. "Hi, I'm Buffy Pewtersmith of the College Republicans. What do you think of the president's health care plan?" And I just looked at her and said, "Sure wish he had one. Sure wish the Congress would get off its duff and pass single-payer universal health care. It's the only solution to our problem. There is something wrong with a nation that allows corporations to avariciously profit off the illness of our brother and sister Americans. And, of course, at this point, the kids behind me and Agnes are sitting there with, they're doing it. He's gonna go. She lit the fuse! And so I turn to walk away, and she chases me! And I stopped. And she says, well, would you be willing to give up your congressional health care plan in exchange for single payer? And I just looked at her and said, I wish I had it. I said, the Congress of the United States has the best socialized medicine that the people of the United States can possibly give them, and the rest of us deserve it. That woman thought I was a member of Congress. You know, if we hadn't had meetings, me? The hillbilly? The rube from West Virginia? I look like a congressman? Help me, Jesus! But yeah. And so we got back up on the, we got back up to the, and we went outside because we were waiting to go to a meeting at the EPA. And I thought my family was going to come unglued. You know? Because the minute that it became obvious what was going on there, all three of my kids' little smart-ass lights went on. Beep, beep, beep. You know, there's Margaret sticking the imaginary microphone in my... Well, Congressman Daddy, what do you think? And there's Doodle beside me going, Daddy, if... Do you want to be a congressman, Daddy? No, honey. No. And Ferg couldn't stop laughing long enough to breathe. And so there was that. Crazy. Crazy was all over the place. More so than usual. I mean, you know, on any given day you go to Capitol Hill, there's some, you know, dude with a tie-dyed T-shirt bongoing for peace under a tree somewhere. Yeah, well, I expect that. And you're constantly being passed. It's like going to the doctor's office and the guy goes past you with the little sample case and you know that you've just been shunted aside for a pharmaceutical sales rep. Well, it's like that. And you know what? We went into enemy territory. Mm-hmm. We went. First of all, there was a meeting scheduled with David Vitter's office. And there's Ferg standing at the sign-up sheet going, oh, I want to go, Dad. I want to go. Isn't he the one with the hookers and the diapers? And the... We ain't going, boy! Maybe I made a mistake in letting the boy come back here and be Horn Intern Junior Grade Ferg for a while. He's learned, oh, what has been seen cannot be unseen. What has been learned cannot be unlearned. But no, we didn't go to David Vitter's office. But we went to Representative Cow's office. He represents a big chunk of New Orleans. He's a Republican, and most of his constituency are Democrats. And he's actually rather concerned about FEMA issues and safety issues. And so in pressing for him to co-sponsor H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, I looked at his legislative assistant and I said, "We're here talking to your talking to you and hoping you'll talk to your boss, because we have a lot in common. Poor people who have been let down heretofore by their government." Because what happened to the ninth, lower Ninth Ward? What happened to New Orleans? What happened to the Gulf Coast with Katrina can happen any minute of any day in Appalachia. And I started explaining to her about the coal company's own documents say nearly 1,000 people die if one of those sludge dams breaks. And her eyes got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so, it was a trip worth taking. We also went to the office of Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho. And that was another Ferg moment, because he homed in like he had some sort of the pervy radar or something. He homed in on the photo of Wide Stance Larry that's hanging, you know, they've got pictures of the entire Idaho Senate delegation from the minute Idaho became a state. And he went, "That!" And I went, "Shut up!" But lo and behold, we sat down with his legislative assistant, and I asked, I said, "Folks in western states get kind of testy about their water rights, don't they?" He says, "Oh, you betcha." I said, "Because water's precious out there." "You know it is." I said, "Imagine then having been making use of a well in excess of 100 years, and one day you turn on the tap and it runs something that looks like tomato soup and smells like rotten eggs because the coal companies decided that their profits are more important than your water." I said, "How do you reckon your constituents in Idaho would respond to knowing that people's water's being stolen in West Virginia, where we have abundant water, but most of it's being poisoned every day?" He said they wouldn't like it. And it turned out to be one of the more productive meetings that we had. It's all about how you craft the message. So there was that. What a busy, busy, busy week it was. And of course, every office you went into, it was almost virtually every legislative assistant we talked to said, "You know, we understand this issue is important to you, but," and we got to the point where we could fill in the blank after the but healthcare is on the front burner right now. "Yes, I understand. And I hope you understand that this is a healthcare issue. Every day that we go by that mountaintop removal has not been stopped in Appalachia, health care becomes more costly for Appalachia and the states that are in Appalachia. You can cut cut costs simply by eliminating this practice, because this practice is killing us. So, there's that. But most of all, thank you to all of you who participated and wrote. You know, you never know whose office you're going to walk past when you're going to from one office to the other. I dropped a packet off with a Horn business card for Al Franken, because I know he knows the issue, because he he had some of our dear friends on to talk about it. To talk about mountaintop removal. Mountain removal. Told his assistant, listen, this one's easy for Senator Franken. This one's real easy. And I'm going to follow up. I'm going to follow up on all of these things. You have to follow up. But going down the hallways of one of the House office buildings, click, clack, click, clack, you know, shoe soles and heels on marble flooring. And we walked past the door that innocuously announced Michelle Bachmann, Minnesota. And I just put my hands behind the kids and just pushed them a little. Go, 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 go. Keep crazies behind that door. It was like, I looked at that door and it had essence of Exorcist. I mean, it was like something out of Ghostbusters. It was just, it's like the door was breathing with the crazy inside. So that's pretty much our week. An exciting week. A very exciting week. And I know that crazy was going on in the rest of the world, too. I've been playing catch-up all day long. So I know there's plenty to talk about. There is crazy all over the place. I know what the top stories of the day are, but every now and then I'll start getting ready for a show, and something that may not speak so much to others just jumps all over me like poison ivy. And that's the case with this story. Right-wing Christian says Jesus hinted at name of Antichrist Barack Obama. Don't know if you saw this or not. Whew, mother. This is audio from a video that has been put up at YouTube by an anonymous religion industry evangelical fundamentalist. A warning goes out to our resident Hebrew scholar, Texas Betsy. This one's going to drive you crazy, Betsy, because this one's going to take allusions to Hebrew words and allusion to Old Testament scripture, and, well, you'll have to hear it for yourself, but I'll probably hear the screaming coming all the way from Austin. So my apologies, Betsy. Just, oh, God. Did Jesus reveal the name of the Antichrist?
I will report the facts. You can decide.
Oh, well, we know who he watches.
In Luke chapter 10, verse 18, Jesus said these words. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning falling from the heavens. These words are written in Greek and translated to English. However, Jesus spoke these words originally in Aramaic.
Okay, do you see the initial problem? We've got words written in Greek, translated to English, but Jesus spoke Aramaic. And we won't bring in the whole business of there's no way of testing the accuracy of whether he actually said this or any of that kind of stuff. But that's okay, you know, because facts like their Saint Ronnie Reagan once said, facts are stupid things.
This is the most ancient form of Hebrew.
Aramaic.
As you know, the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. If a modern Jewish rabbi were to speak...
Wait, if Aramaic is the most ancient form of Hebrew, then why wasn't the Old Testament written in Aramaic? But, you know, who the heck am I?
These words of Jesus today, he would speak them in Hebrew, much the same way that Jesus would have spoken them.
But we don't know that because Jesus grew up in an area that was fairly cosmopolitan for its day, near a fairly cosmopolitan city, and as a day laborer, you know, he went into his father's work, and his father was a day laborer. The technon being the Greek word for laborer that is most often mistranslated as carpenter, which it ain't. It means day laborer, you know, just like the guys that stand outside Home Depot looking for work every day. That's the kind of worker Joseph and Jesus, Yeshua, were. Okay, so false premise number what of many? Jesus would have spoken Hebrew. Yeah, he probably did, but he probably knew a few words in Greek. Probably knew he probably spoke Aramaic natively. But this creep can't be bothered with that.
If he were to speak these words of Jesus today, he would speak them in Hebrew, much the same way that Jesus would have spoken them. So in Hebrew, Jesus said that he saw Satan falling as lightning from the heights or from the heavens.
No, no, no. See, the Bible doesn't say lightning falling from the heights or from the heavens. It says lightning falling from the heights. And herein lies the problem. But it's never been one to get in the way of a Bible-believing evangelical fundamentalist.
So what are the words for lightning and heights or heavens in Hebrew?
Okay, pay attention, Betsy.
From the Strong's Hebrew Dictionary, word number 1299...
Oh, well, if it's word number 1299, it has to be correct.
Primitive root word meaning to lighten or light...
Okay.
Strong's Hebrew Dictionary, word number 1299, a primitive root word meaning to lighten or lightning or to cast forth, the word is barak. In the Strong's Hebrew Dictionary, word number 1300, lightning, or by analogy, a gleam, a flashing sword, or a brightness or a glittering, the Hebrew word is barak. So lightning, or a flash of light, in Hebrew, is pronounced barak or barak. Now consider this amazing fact. The book of Isaiah is the source of origin for the Christian concept and understanding of Satan, or
read the book.
Lucifer, as Isaiah calls him, in chapter 14, especially in verses 12 through 19. In Isaiah chapter 14, verse 14, Lucifer, or Satan, is credited with these words, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High.
Doesn't that mean that Lucifer had to have been on earth? I mean, or does heaven and the holy home of God, you know, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent that, you know, smites people for wearing blends of fabric, the polyester cotton blend shirts and stuff, or does the, what, do they got clouds?
In the verses of Isaiah that refer directly to Lucifer, several times it is mentioned that Satan has fallen from the heights or from the heavens. The Hebrew word used in this text for the heights from which Satan fell is Strong's Hebrew word 1116.
Does it say that in the scripture? This is Strong's Hebrew word 1116.
Pronounced Bama. Bama is most commonly used to refer to a high sacred place, as well as to the heights of the heavens or the clouds. In Hebrew, the...
Of course, in Strong's Hebrew Dictionary word 1116, it also apparently means wave.
Letter wa is often transliterated as a u. Some scholars use the o for this transliteration. It is primarily used as a conjunction to join concepts together. So to join in Hebrew poetry the concept of lightning or barak, and a high place like heaven or the heights of heaven, the letter U, or sometimes O, the Hebrew letter wa, would be used. So, Barak O Bama, or Barak U Bama, in Hebrew poetry, similar to the style written in Isaiah, would translate literally as...
Do you hear the ominous music? You know it's coming, right?
Lightning, and the heights, or the heavens, or lightning from the heights of the skies or the heavens.
By the way, our biblical scholar here, because this is all written out in the video with little medieval pictures of fallen Lucifer with his bat wings slumping and crap like that. Our Bible scholar says, Barak, B-A-R-A-Q, and then quotation marks, U, close quotes, bomb, B-A-M, hyphen, maw, capital M-A-W. Lightning from the heights, H-E-I-G-T-H-S. Yeah, our biblical scholar can't even spell freaking English, and we're supposed to trust him for this. Never mind. Spell check is your friend, Reverend.
The word Satan is Satan in Hebrew.
Yeah, which, interestingly enough, also translates as lawyer or advocate, but never mind.
A direct translation. So back to Jesus' prophecy in Luke chapter 10, verse 18. If spoken by a Jewish rabbi today, influenced by the poetry of Isaiah, he would say these words.
Jesus, this is better than Barbara Walters. If you were a twee, what kind of twee would you be?
Words in Hebrew. The words of Jesus in Luke chapter 10, verse 18, as, "And I saw Satan as Barack Obama."
Yes, yes, it's him, and he wasn't born in Hawaii, and that's why he doesn't have a birth certificate. Oh my God, it's all so clear now.
Did Jesus reveal to us the name of the Antichrist?
No.
I report, you decide.
And now we know which news channel, phony news channel, you watch. I report, you decide. And he even puts a bottom line on the screen. Bottom line is this. We don't know what Aramaic Hebrew words Jesus used exactly, but it is a fact that to express lightning from the heights or heavens in Hebrew in the style of Isaiah 14, it would most likely be rendered with the words or a form of the roots of the words Barak and Bama. This would match the exact context of what Jesus was saying in Luke. These correlations were striking enough for me to produce this film. If you disagree, fine. No harm, no foul. This film is not to declare that BHO is the Antichrist. It is only a statement of fact concerning the use of certain Hebrew words in relation to the words of Jesus. It does not proclaim that BHO is the Antichrist. But, of course, if it goes a little way toward pushing a little bit more of the eliminationist BS that seems to be rising to the top of the fetid, bubbling, simmering mass of evil, toxic goo that is what passes for repig-licking thought these days, then yeah, they're saying that Barack Obama is the Antichrist. And of course, what is the duty of any Christian with... Well, you gotta try to, you know. Because, you know, the Antichrist. But it's just... Oh, well, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number without the toll-free. BobKincaid@gmail.com is the email address. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
Gentle sweet singing breeze in the wind.
13 minutes before the hour. I think we are well into a what promises to be a Jim Dandy Front Porch Friday conversation. Well, hey, look, there's the phone ringing. And we've got, we've got a couple of lines open if you want to jump into the fray and join the conversation. And let's see what's happening.
3 months.
Oh, that's a telemarketer. Well, that's not joining the conversation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Just to shift the conversation just a hair.
Okay.
I refer you to your friend and mine, dear old Senator Ben Nelson, Democrat, Nebraska.
Yeah, we met with his office.
Yeah, he apparently doesn't like being targeted by the, people like, you know, Move On and stuff. So he has put out a statement saying, in effect, and this.
Oh, no, we met with Bill Nelson's office, my bad. Ben, yeah, Ben's the mugwump in Nebraska.
Yeah, he said, in a quote, he is looking to support bipartisan legislation that reduces health care costs, boosts the quality of health care, and expands coverage to people who can't obtain it now.
Well, that means he supports single payer.
This is an indication of the politics going into August, then health care reform may be dead by the end of August. Unquote. Translation.
Shut
up about me, or I will kill health care reform.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe he just needs to be an ex-senator. And look, you know how much I believe in activism and how our success should be, our success with advocacy should be measured in some sort of system that was remotely honest, should be measured by the quality of legislation that comes forth from Congress. And I don't want to be one of what the Spiro T. Agnew once called that mass of nattering nabobs of negativity. But from what I have seen, what I saw in the last few days, I fear that healthcare, any kind of meaningful, and look, I want single-payer healthcare, universal single-payer healthcare. It is the only solution, all right? I saw, Yeah, we were on our way out of D.C. yesterday. We were leaving the Hill for the last day, and we were walking back over to Union Station because we'd been on the Senate side. You know, if you're going to the Senate side, you use Union Station. If you of the Metro, if you're going to the House side, you use Capitol South. And we met some lovely ladies wearing single payer healthcare now T-shirts. And carrying signs, and they were on their way to, you know, they were marching on the Capitol, three or four or five or six of them, maybe there were more. And we gave them the thumbs up and words of support. And they stopped to, you know, and they wanted to know, was Agnes a Christian? I'm glad they asked her, because she gave a nice answer. It was kind of, you remember that old song, Walking in Memphis? And there's that line in one of the verses that said, and she said, son, are you a Christian? And I replied, ma'am, I am tonight. Well, it was one of those moments. For your purposes, ma'am, I'm a Christian. Because single payer healthcare is a manifestation of Christian doctrine. If you define Christian as the teachings and words of Yeshua, the itinerant brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer.
Yep.
So, yeah, for their purposes, sure. But I'm scared. And I don't often say I'm scared. You know me.
And I got a punch right in the face this weekend, or this week, last week, just how precarious it is, earlier, a few months ago, Donald was in the hospital, and but he was covered by the VA, or so I thought. Guess what? The VA is, because they couldn't accommodate him at the hospital because the emergency room was all up, full up, they sent him to another hospital. They're refusing to pay the bill.
You're kidding.
Guess who gets there stuck with it?
Well, no, there's an appeal process, and you have to go through that. You just do. You don't just take their word on it. If you have to, you go and get a lawyer. There are lawyers who do this.
We don't have the money for a lawyer.
No, no, no. There are lawyers who do this without charging a fee.
Well, I've already got a call into Wu. He's good about that.
That may be a way to get it, too, but if you have to get counsel, you don't eat this bill. You simply do not.
Oh, I won't. I can't eat it. There's no way. No way.
Right.
It either gets written off or it doesn't get paid at all. I'm sorry. It's just not there. But because the VA decides to be obnoxious, where's the money going to come from? Not from us. If there was universal single payer, there would not be a question of hospital, of hospital, of hospital.
No. But, of course, it's kind of interesting. One of the things that I did notice as I was, I think it was early in the week, maybe it was as we were leaving or something, I got an email about it, can't remember. But William Crystal, you know, the guy... You know, if William Crystal spoke and there was no one to hear him, would he still be wrong? Said that, you know, no, the American people don't, because whoever was interviewing him equated, said, look, you know, that's a universal single-payer socialized medicine-style system we have for the VA. The American people don't deserve that? No, they don't deserve that. They never served in the military. But now we're finding out that the people that William Crystal say do deserve it ain't getting it.
Nope.
Now, at what point in time, Susan, do the American people say enough? Because we still haven't.
That's what I'd like to know. He went through two bloody wars. I was going to thinking of several different adjectives, but I won't because there are little kiddies in the room.
Right, and I think, yeah, some of them may have been participles, but yes.
Two expletive deleted wars. Come on, fellas. What does he have to do? Die? Yeah, probably. In one of those battles, he had to sleep right next to 2.5 miles of... Do you know what a long tom is?
Yeah.
He had to sleep right next to 2.5 miles of those parked hub to hub as they fired. Can you imagine what it did to his hearing?
Yeah, it ain't good for it.
If anybody in the sound of my voice has proof that they were in Operation Thunderbolt, please contact me because we need that proof.
Indeed. And frankly...
You see, we can't prove it. We can't even prove that Operation Thunderbolt produced it. Which is just...
a little nuts.
You know, and so he has to go around. He can't hear hardly anything. Because he's mostly deaf. Support the troops. Yeah, folks.
Buy your Chinese yellow ribbon magnet now. Support the troops.
Yeah. God bless Ben Nelson and his friends. On a more positive note, Barack Obama seems dead set on bringing the Presidential Medal of Freedom back into
honorability.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that.
His first 16 have come out, among them Teddy Kennedy, Harvey Milk, the founder of Race for the Cure.
Yep.
I thought that was a pretty good list.
Yeah, I agree. And there were some more on there that were pretty inspiring.
Oh, yeah.
So
even Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah, Sandra Day O'Connor is on that list.
I have my issues with her, but she was the very, very first woman on the court.
She was, and I guess that stands for something. It stands for something, even if the very first woman on the court screwed this country to the wall. By, you know, handing us Bush v. Gore. She could have followed the law, but she followed her politics instead.
Exactly. She could have done what Sotomayor does, which... did you hear that interview that Tom Tancredo gave?
Yep, got it in the stat. Sonja Meyer?
Yeah, he made her sound like she was Jewish, and the only thing I could think of when I heard that was, my God, Golda Meir, it just turned over to green. Not over the fact that she was being connected with the judge, but because this man was so bloody ignorant.
But I've got a larger question within the context of that story. Do you know where he made this statement? This statement, well, okay, here, let's just run the audio instead of talking around it. Let's just run the audio. That seems to make more sense.
Say that. I do not know if he has a hatred for white people. I can say that his statements, and by the way, his appointment of someone I do believe to be a racist, Sonja Meyer, for her racial views, by the way, that is an indication, that could be used as an indication by some, that he is indeed a racist, because it's depending on what you use as a definition.
Yeah, what you use is a definite. But the point is where he made that statement. You know, he started out by calling Sonia Sotomayor a racist for being a member of La Raza or some such. He did that on MSNBC, and lo and behold, here he is making a statement again, and he's making it on Ed Schultz's show. And I asked the same question that I asked back then, Susan, when he first showed up calling her a racist. What is that right-wing, bigoted, racist freak doing on Ed Schultz's show? He's not in Congress. He has no power. He makes no policy. He has nothing to contribute to the discussion. I mean, if the guy was still in Congress, you could say, okay, well, he's a member of Congress, and therefore he has... This guy's... If you're going to have him on there to spout racist BS, why not have me on there or you or any other member of the Horn family on there to counter him? Because that's all he is. He's a private citizen just like us. Why does MSNBC persist in having these freaks on their programs?
Good question.
There are hours and hours and hours of right-wing hate out there. Beck and O'Reilly and Hannity and on and on and on and on. They've got an abundance of time. Why are we giving the right-wing more on what little so-called liberal programming there is?
Yeah, and why are they going on and on and on about this Gates thing? Cripe, let it die. They're the ones keeping it alive.
Yeah. It was...
With the birther thing. Let it die.
Well, I don't know. The birther thing is also being advanced by the right wing. And it is news, Susan, that 52% of registered Republicans in this country are birthers.
Yeah, and most of those are in the South, which is, I suppose, that's pretty much par for the course. Says something right there. You know, how they've become a regional party. because that's basically where all the Republicans are. They're in the South, they're in Appalachia, and that's basically where the Republicans are anymore.
Yeah, but what's his name? Peter King's in Long Island, and he's crazier than a sprayed roach. Mike Pence is in Indiana, and he's...
Well, I'm talking about strength-wise.
Yeah, well, but strength... But
they don't really have any strength anywhere else.
They've got enough strength to get him into office. They've got enough strength to get a creep like Charles Grassley into office. You know? I mean, John Kyle? Arizona is chock-a-block with Minutemen and birthers and all manner of freakazoids.
Yeah, I just don't know. I really don't. There was a I forgot what it was. I was going to bring up two other goodies. One was the Shatner thing with the
yeah, I love that. Love that.
Oh yeah. Oh, I can get off.
Yeah, the Palin's tweets. That was just cute.
Yes, that was just lovely. Even if it was Shatner, and he's not one of my favorite people, but that one was just lovely. The one thing that does seem to have a silver lining is Baucus might lose his chairmanship over this.
Might. But that might is a long might as long. Remember, the guy who might strip him of his chairmanship is the same guy who didn't quite have the nerve to do anything to Joe Lieberman. Harry Reid. I mean, come on. Might, please.
Yeah. I've got to tell you, we need to get rid of Reid. We really need to get rid of Reid. Of course, we need to get rid of all these blue dogs, too. And I have to tell you, and I really wish other people would do this, if they have a long-distance plan. Don't just call your own delegation. Call Baucus's office. Call Wyden's office. Call all of these blue dogs. Wyden isn't technically a blue dog, but he's a shill for Big Pharma. Nail him. And he's my senator, but nail him anyway. I've been doing it on a regular basis. I will be campaigning against him. I'll be sending money to somebody.
Well, I hope you find somebody to run against him in the primary if that's your goal. Because remember, I mean, this is just one of those little political, politics 101 things. The general election is no remedy. It never is. You're presented with an incumbent.
I realize that.
And somebody who's probably worse. So it has to be, you know, keep your thumb on the pulse beat of Oregon politics and find out if anybody's going to challenge him in the primary and get behind that guy if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because that's when it matters.
The guy that almost won Merkley's seat might be up for it. The thing is, we also have to remember the historical precedent here. Clinton didn't get health care done, and there was a god-awful electoral bloodbath.
Yeah.
And these people, these blue dogs, need to remember that, because pay attention, dudes. It's coming down your way.
Well, you know, and it's
vulnerable. You're not.
You remind me of something, Susan. There was an editorial cartoon that Bart Kopp had up over at his page, bartkopp.com, and it showed an elephant looking over the shoulder of Harry Truman, with Harry Truman holding something that said "Healthcare Reform 1945."
Mm-hmm.
Saying, "What's the rush?" And then an elephant looking over the shoulder of Bill Clinton, and it says, "Healthcare Reform 1992. And he says, "What's the rush?" And now the elephant, a third frame with the elephant looking over the shoulder of Barack Obama, holding a paper that says, "Healthcare Reform 2009. Again, saying, "What's the rush?" This is, and you know, I think it has something to do with the fact that we don't have the ability to hold ourselves accountable to our history, if that makes any sense. Among other things, I'm looking here at a 1960s ad that shows a skinny, my God, it looks like the cover, it looks like it could be the potential cover of a B-52s album or something. This skinny, thin necktie, suit-wearing, black-haired, greasy-headed Ronald Reagan in red letters. Ronald Reagan! And then underneath, speaks out against socialized medicine. And you know what that is? That's not just healthcare. That was Ronald Reagan's advocacy against Medicare. He said this.
Yeah.
He said this. If you don't stop Medicare and I don't do it, one of these days you and I are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free. 1961. Yep.
Pay attention, guys.
Barry Goldwater, 1964. Having given our pensioners their medical care in kind, why not food baskets? Why not public housing accommodations? Why not vacation resorts? Why not a ration of cigarettes for those who smoke and beer for those who drink?
Why not treating people like human beings? France seems to do it real well. They seem to have a hard time finding a hook for this, to hang this whole thing. How about co-op? It's just another industry bailout.
Well, the co-op thing can't work because the co-op thing, I remember, you know, we've heard from our buddy Richard out in the Bay Area, and it's tough to make the co-op thing work. Simply because they take so long to get on their feet, and they don't have the purchasing power of the humongous insurance industry entities.
Yeah, they're making this so hard because they're trying to start from scratch. It would have been so easy. Just put everybody in Medicare.
Well, that's what the ladies who asked Agnes if she was a Christian. Were advocating for. They all had their HR 676 T-shirts and their HR 676 signs.
Because everything was already in place. All they would have had to do was hire the support staff, expand the support staff by a month, 10,000. Whoop-de-doo. That's not hard.
I got to tell you, Susan, I don't think there's anything in this country that isn't hard anymore. Everything that we try and everything that we attempt to do in which we try to do good for we, the people of the United States, attempting to form a more perfect union, is opposed at every turn by a gang of corporatist right-wing thugs who want to make sure it doesn't happen.
Well,
because there's an idea that has taken root that if it's good for the American people, it must be bad for corporate America. Because you see, corporate America, Susan, doesn't just want some of the American treasury.
They want it all.
And for the last 8 years, from 2001 to 2009, they pretty much shook the pocket change out of the American people.
I got to tell you this. I'm a Scot like you. And being a Scot, you can knock on me, but I may not be able to stop you. But what I am going to do is I'm going to carry a grudge till the end of time. And if they manage to kill healthcare again, what I'm going to want to do, in fact, I've already told my congressman, that the day they kill healthcare, I want him up in the House presenting a bill that mandates a tax on all insurance companies, investment companies, banks, and a few other goodies. To the tune of 90%. We don't get health care. We get our pound of flesh.
I'm hard pressed to disagree with you, but I'm also enough of a realist to know that we are not very good.
Oh, it won't pass, but at least it'll get the idea across. Guys, you screwed up, because then comes the election, and then the bloodbath starts. Because do you think any of these blue dogs will manage to stay in office? Nope. Because the Republicans will be saying, these people killed health care. And their Democratic challengers will be saying, these people killed health care. They're gone. And the Republicans will be waiting in the wings to step in and saying, we'll fix it. We'll fix it. Remember dear old Newt?
Sure. And that's how they hope to come back to power. They've already admitted it. If they can just make this fail. And look, they've got the past to fall back on. This is a bunch of recalcitrant Democrats who would not support their president killed health care in 1992, and then they in turn were relegated to the minority in the 1994 midterms. What did I say a few minutes ago? We lack the proper reverence for our own histories.
Yeah.
And by reverence, I'm not talking about anybody getting on their knees and praying or anything. I'm talking about acknowledging the lessons that history has to teach about the present and the future.
Yeah.
And this isn't even the dim and distant past. This is past that is right smack dab on top of us. It's right behind us. If you turn, how can any Democrat in Congress, Senate, or the House not look over their shoulder and not see 1992 staring them in their damn faces?
Yeah. That's what I want to know. How can you know? It's simple. Most of them refuse to look.
At some point in time, and maybe this is just because I'm cranky and apparently now Scots-Irish, now that I've found, what was his name here? I got his name. He was born in Ireland in 1706, I do believe. I got it right here. Yeah, John McClung. Born 1706 in Ireland, died 1788 in Rockbridge County, Virginia. So I'm now Scots-Irish. Gonna have to come to terms with that. I'm kidding. Yeah, if you think about it, Scots-Irish, you know, what?
Don't feel bad.
What a combination.
Don't feel bad. I don't mind the Irish part. What I mind was the fact that to his dying day, my grandfather refused to admit that one of his ancestors had a small piece of English in there.
Well, I can see how that would. And frankly, for all I know, with a name like McClung, he went from his forebears went from Scotland to Ireland. Because always remember, the Scots landed on Ireland and fell on their knees and prayed to God, and then fell on the locals and prayed on them.
Yeah.
It's true. I think I'd feel better if John McClung's forebears were really Irish. But
since you are of the pink variety of Scots Irish, I can guarantee you, your ancestors went back further than that. Your ancestors came off the Daneland Peninsula.
Now you just stop that.
No, hey, mine did too.
No. See, I'm related to that. What's the title of that Pink Floyd song?
Short and dark.
A gathering of small furry animals grooving in a cave with a Pict. That Pict is my forebears.
You're not Pictish. I'm sorry, Bob. You're not. You come out of the Viking strain. And that means.
Oh, and that, well, okay. Yeah, you go back and you find the pictures of me from a year or two ago. Yeah, and that does kind of explain why John Fox referred to me as looking like some Viking gone to seed.
Exactly. you got booted, your ancestors got booted off of the Viking Peninsula just like mine did.
Probably explains my passion for Aquavit. you know what? And I'll catch hell for this. This little portion of the continent. No, I'll get letters. Oh, I will get letters. What was I talking about? You see what you do to me? No, maybe it's just my Scots-Irish heritage. But I'm ready for somebody to stand up in the House and start calling names and start getting real damned ugly, because they invented this birther crap, and now they're inventing these old people exit interviews on how to die.
Yeah, and
I'll have a debate, an argument, a discussion all day long with people I disagree with, and I'll have it civilly. But God Almighty, when you start just making crap up and telling lies, you're cheating.
Yeah, that came because Earl Blumenauer from Oregon put a thing in that bill because he didn't want any more people to end up like Terry Schiavo did.
And it gets transformed into this wholesale piece of BS that doesn't even exist.
Exactly. Oh, boy, Blumenauer is pissed. He is royally pissed. He is frothing at the mouth pissed.
I imagine somebody's pulled him aside and said, Earl, anybody ever tell you that the road to hell is paved with good intentions? Yeah. Hey, Susan, I got to roll on, dear, but this has been fun.
Love to Agnes.
Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon, and rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
Is this a congressman or senator or what?
Which, Earl Blumenauer?
No, you.
Oh, me.
You forgot already?
I'm trying real hard.
That's so funny. I'll sit here and laugh my head off.
And would you give up your congressional health care for... Darn right, I wish I had it in the first place.
That's so funny. What did she say then?
Oh, I walked away at that point.
Oh.
Because I could feel the giggle rays. I couldn't see them, but with my parental eyes in the back of my parental head, I could see that my son was probably about to spontaneously combust.
That.
And my daughters were not going to be far behind in coming completely unglued.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to hear, Mommy, look at the stupid college Republicans. They think Daddy's a congressman.
That is really funny. I'd have probably been right with him laughing my head off. Oh, Lord. My mind just went blank.
Then you know a little bit of what it's like inside my mind. I mean, what are you supposed to do? I was just minding my own business, stepping off the elevator. And then Agnes looks up and goes, you know why she thought you were a congressman, honey? And I said, why? And she said, because you stepped off the members-only elevator, you scofflaw. You're not supposed to be riding that elevator. But I didn't have the little magic congressman pin on.
It looks like a very dignified.
Me? Me? No. There ain't nothing dignified or dignitary or statesman-like about me. Holes in my shoes and probably two or three dribbles of lunch down the front of me. Yeah, no. No.
Well, her idea, you know, that's hilarious. I wonder if she was with the radio or something.
She was with the College Republicans, and they were making Republican hate video about single payer.
Yeah.
I have a feeling I'm going to wind up on the cutting room floor.
Well, now, I've been watching a lot of those hearings. Again, I was thinking, I wonder if Bob's there. Did you go to any of the hearing?
No, we were going office to office. No, I didn't have a chance to go. Now, I tell you what, some of our number went to the, God, I wish you could see. Never mind. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the chat room at the same time. bad chatters, bad ELO, bad. No, some of our number went to the hearing that was had on the Kingston, Tennessee coal ash spill, where Parker Griffith from the 5th Congressional District of Alabama, which is my home district in Alabama, asked some damn good questions. At one point, he said, "We know that coal ash is bad for you," because he's an MDC. "We know that coal ash is bad for you because of the cancers that they started noticing in the chimney sweeps in the 1700s. What do you mean we don't know if this stuff is bad?"
Wow. That was some good information.
It was. So I have real hopes that he'll sign on to the Clean Water Protection Act.
Well, no, I was a few little odds and ends that I was wanting to talk about was, I know that you played some of the thing about the, you said it was the Australian guys from, that went to.
Oh, you talking about the John, yeah, the John Yu, yeah.
Did you see another video they made about Barney?
No.
Well, they went to, who's the guy that was creepier than creep? Cheney's abode. And one of them was dressed up like Barney, you know, the dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going there because he said that, you know, they had used Barney to, the Barney song and all to torture the
right
people in Guantanamo. And so he was all dressed up like Barney because he was wanting to get some royalties from Disney. And what was funny was there was a policeman stopped him and said, "Take off that hat." You know, he said, "It's against the law to have a hat on around here on these highways." He took off the hat, and the Secret Service man came out, and I thought, Secret Service man? I thought that was just for the ex-president. But now I heard that he's going to have him, that he's going to have him for a longer time.
Yeah, Janet Napolitano, Homeland Security Secretary.
Yeah, that's right.
Expanded his Secret Service coverage beyond the usual 6 months. Because Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney is afraid that Osama might get him. Yeah, he's really afraid is that some patriotic Americans might carry him off.
Right. Of course. He's not afraid of those other people. He's one of them. But, no, they've got, they're still going on in the Congress with the hearings on, the medical. Did you hear about the group of Democrats that came out? I saw their little press conference. Did you hear about that?
No.
The ones that they said that if we don't have the public option, they're not going to vote for it. They're not going to vote for a watered-down bill.
Good.
And they were,
But then again, that, you know, anything that stops anything from happening is fine and dandy by the insurance industry.
Oh, well, yeah, they don't care. But they, they were coming out and it wasn't just the Black Caucus. It was a bunch of them. Bunch of different ones in it. And, they'd probably show it on C-SPAN again.
Well, but apparently they've come around. I did see some, now that I have a little better idea, yeah. Apparently they've come around and said, "Well, we've got a bad bill, but we're probably going to vote for it."
Oh, they're going to vote for it anyway?
Yeah.
Well, I hear conflicting things. I don't know. I hear one thing, and then I hear something else, you know, so I don't know what's going on. But another thing is about the about the policeman and Professor Gates and all.
Yeah, the beer summit.
Yeah. They've been playing the tape that the woman, you know, woman called in. She did not say it was black, anybody black. They asked her if it was. She said one of them might have been Spanish, you know, Hispanic. But
then the police report itself says that she said it was two black men with backpacks.
Well, that she says is not true. She's come out. She's her life has been threatened. She said she did not tell him that. That was not, you know, she did not tell him that at all. He made up stuff. Which, that don't surprise me.
But who's threatening her?
Oh, people are, she said, she had a press conference, and she said people were calling her a racist and everything, and but she didn't. She said she did not tell him anything like that. She just, you know how when they come out, usually they'll look for the person that made the call. And she acknowledged that she made the call. And there was other things that was written in the report. Now, I heard this on this Jack Rice show and other places. When I first heard about the report, about her saying that, I heard it that it was the fact that it wasn't.
But let me ask Juanita, did she come forward with any proof of these threats she's received?
I don't know, but are you surprised that she received threats?
I don't know who would threaten her.
Well, I don't know offhand. I don't know that. But I'm not. The thing is, what I don't get is
I'm suspicious. I'm suspicious.
The address out.
I'm suspicious of her story.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Well, you don't think the pot cop made up something?
No.
You don't?
No. I don't think on that report that was dead. No, I personally don't think it was.
Well, I know they do.
Oh, sure, they make up stuff, but in this instance, it is more simple and more plausible to believe that you know, the tapes are out there. And then the cop is, how do I explain this? When cops are taking reports, Juanita, they often ask what are called leading questions.
Oh, I understand that. I know that.
And she said what she said on the tapes, and then she may very well have been led into something else on the written report. You know, when the cops showed up.
Well, you,
or
you
else
know,
maybe, or the
I
other.
Can, po- I can, you know, I'll take your word because I'm sure you know more about it than I do. I'm just going by, you know, other stuff I've heard, you know, that she didn't say that.
Well, no, she doesn't say it on the tape. That's abundantly clear. What I'm saying is that the cops will ask leading questions in taking a report. In order to make sense of what their idea is in the first place, and they were black, were they, ma'am? You did say they were black. I don't. I guess you know because people. It doesn't matter if you're guilty or innocent. When you're being interrogated by an officer of the law, you're intimidated.
Of course.
Do you see what I'm saying? I'm not accusing her of being dishonest. I don't want to come across
well,
that way.
You know, I'm not saying that she said that. I'm saying that it was said that, you know, I didn't hear. I heard her press one of her
but I'm just wondering,
press conference, but I didn't that she said she'd been threatened.
I'm just wondering who would have threatened her. I mean, it's not like what did the Black Panthers call her and threaten her? You see what I'm saying?
I see where you're coming from, but, you know.
I mean, generally speaking, the dangerous people are right-wingers. And
well,
I just
think that's another thing, is he has had his, Gates has had his website polluted with threats, you know, with stuff from racist people.
Right.
And they keep giving his address out. I don't understand that. Why they give his address out, exact address.
Right. Well, but you know. I mean, there's always a subtext to this stuff. There's a reason they're giving his address out. Just like there's a reason that the right-wing evangelicals come up with the fantastic Bible stories to suggest that Barack Obama is the Antichrist.
Yeah. Well, I heard what you were playing and all, but let me tell you something that happened after 9-1-1. And I actually heard this on Christian broadcast, and there was one program I used to listen to, you know, where they reviewed books and stuff. And after 9/11 happened, a lot of people, you know, got reinterested in the last days. And they actually said on there that a lot of these people that had written books years ago, maybe not too many years ago, just took the same thing and just brought it up to date, and they were just bestsellers because people were buying it like it was going out of style. And it was the same thing that had been said a long time ago. Maybe names were changed and the dates were changed, but it was the same thing. That's how crooked and rotten they can be.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, so I told you what my friend, you know, she said that he was going to destroy this country because he didn't have our values. And that's when I just went ballistic toward her because, you know, I feel like, hey, wait a minute. And the thing is, I said, you people want to bring on the war so we'll have Jesus to come back. I said, why not let the Antichrist? Jesus can't come back, according to you, until the Antichrist comes. And I said, why not, if he's the Antichrist, why not just let it happen? Let it go ahead and happen. You know, I'm just, you know, using, like, trying to use some twisted logic there. I mean, I don't believe that. But I know one thing. I do not want to go back to the Bush days, and I know, I feel like that if we, you know, if we get rid of what we have now, if the people get rid of the people that wants to, I feel like it's going to be worse than it ever was under him, because they will have had their way, and these cowardly, selfish, so-called Democrats will be the instigators that let it happen. You see what I'm saying? I don't know, Bob. I don't know if I want to live or not.
Well, no. Now stop that.
Well, I don't. I do. I mean, I think about that. I'm not suicidal. I used to be a long time ago. But you know, no, I'm not thinking of it that. But I'm thinking, I'd probably lose the will to live. I'd have to have, because going through 8 years of that thing, it takes something out of you, and you know that's true, Bob.
Sure, it does. You let water flow over a rock after a while, that rock won't have any rough edges left.
Right, right. And you know what they're saying about this killing senior citizens? They're just bringing that out of their own ideas. If you look at it, they definitely were trying to kill senior citizens.
Right. It's part of, and that's, you know, that's what they do so often. These are part of their the business about, you know, socialized medicine is going to kill old people. That's part of their own dark fantasies, because these dirty
right.
have hated Medicare since the moment Medicare was passed. That's why I pointed out that Ronald Reagan business from 1961 and the Barry Goldwater from 1964.
Yeah.
You know.
And also, you stop and think, they don't care if we all, you know, or they don't care if the middle class all dies out, the middle-aged people, your age even. I consider you young because you're about my son's age, you know.
Yeah, but after 3 days walking up and down Capitol Hill, trust me, I felt very, very old. I mean, I was doing.
Old, and I said, "Well, gee, what about me?" But you know, I've been looking at this a long time since the Reagan days, and I had an article from way back then that I said saved, and I think I've lost it. But it's about how they're trying to turn people into serfs.
Yes.
To have a serfdom society. And Bob, I believe that. I believe that's what they would love to have. And they don't care if we all die because they know they'll get people from another country and just treat them worse than even slaves were ever treated.
Well, you know, it was an article of faith in my family. My father would look up every now and then and say, "Boy, the only thing in the world the Republican Party wants is a two-class system. The very rich and the very poor, and none of us in the middle."
And they don't care how they divide them. Just like people like Glenn Beck, my God, that just to look at him, I mean, unbelievable that people would believe him. And they do. They honestly do. And, but, you know, they get fed all this stuff. You get it from everywhere. You get it. You get it in the churches. And I'm telling you, I do believe in God. And I think they're going to have to answer for what the lies that they have told.
But the problem is, I'm not saying that you're wrong. That's not my intent at all, Juanita. The problem is that they're not going to change their ways until they are, until they have to account for their ways in the present in this life.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, I know. And some of them will, Bob. Maybe not all of them, but some of them will.
You know, I remember once, and it was a long time ago, it was here in West Virginia when the insurance industry was trying to take away people's right to sue, and they were largely successful.
Oh, yeah, we've had that over and over.
Right to sue for medical malpractice.
Right.
And there was a guy who had been a lobbyist for the insurance industry, who had been, you know, a vocal opponent of allowing people to sue. But he had his road to Damascus moment.
Uh-huh.
And he had it when he had to have a knee replacement or maybe lost a leg or something awful happened.
Yeah.
Or maybe it happened to his family. But then that very same insurance industry whose willing servant he had been, that very same insurance industry told him to go up a rope. And then, like Mr. Potter, who is speaking out now against the insurance industry, he started doing the same thing, saying, you know, listen, these people are thieves. These people are inhuman. They don't care about human suffering. They care about making money.
That's right. And you know, I'm sure you know what I mean when I say, like, we Southerners are very gullible people. We're very trusting unless we get screwed over so bad and we catch on, because we believe in the goodness of people. Well, there's some evil people in this world. And, you know, and it, well, there just is. And like you said, they don't care. They just don't care. And no, I'm not talking about, you know, but I would just, because, you know, when we lost the election in 2004, I was so sick. I was really devastated. And I have to take stuff, you know, to replace what is it in your chemical that you need to have replaced.
Hormone replacement or something? Or?
Huh? No, well, no. Oh. No, for nutty people.
Oh.
I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Oh, serotonin reuptake inhibitors?
Yeah,
or?
Serotonin, yeah. And anyway, I guess I was just born without it. But anyhow, it wasn't helping me at all. I was getting back like I had been in the past with that. And at that time, I was having counseling, and I had a real good counselor, and I said, what if I don't get better? I said, I can't take this. But I did finally get better. But you know what helped me was our liberal talk shows. And if I hadn't had that, I don't know. It would have, I'm sure I would have got better, but it really, my medicine was not even affecting me at all. I was just so down about it. And that's why I think, I don't know if I could take it again. But, you know, I guess I could. But I don't want to. I want things to get better for us for a while anyway.
And the thing is, Juanita, I want them to get better too, and so does everybody who tunes into this program.
Yeah.
But there comes a time when we have to acknowledge reality. And I'm afraid. I mentioned it to Susan a little bit ago. I am honestly afraid, Juanita. I'm afraid they've killed any hope for health care reform. They've killed it. Because the only reform that had any meaning at all was single payer. And it is simply
if things go back, it's going to be a whole lot worse. And just, well, you know, well, like you said, face facts.
And it gets worse. I mean, I know some people are inclined, because we are embittered. Real liberals, real progressives, in other words, decent people, are really, really embittered at the way we have been sold out.
Oh, yeah.
And we tend to say, well, you know, it couldn't be any worse with the other side. Yes, it could.
Oh, yeah.
It could be much worse.
And they will not have any, even if they stay in power, they will not have it. Because they've been so daggum wishy-washy. And
I know, and that's the thing. That's what I was asking. How can they not know what's coming at them? The Democratic majority in Congress is going to be the creator of its own doom.
Yeah, and they don't want to have anybody in hearings. They don't want to investigate anything. And the dummies, you know, if they do get out, they'll be the first ones to be investigated. Because, you know, you remember all those investigations that they had when they were in power, when they had the power. I even saw some, you know, where they were like that Bob Barr and that other one, you know, that I forget his name, but the one that had a lot of hearings. And they got on these people about not having all of their emails. I mean, they were getting them in serious trouble. And then 9/11 happened, I think that stopped that for a while. But they will investigate anything, and they will do anything, and they don't care. And we, oh no, you can't do that to them. Just like with Nixon, and just like with Irangate. The Democrats had a chance and didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, they were.
And now, I mean,
because and what's the reason for that? Is it because they are more interested in preserving their power than they are in doing the business of the people?
Well, that's one for sure. I think that's got the biggest. I think that might be the biggest reason.
Oh, and by the way, just this is completely off topic, but, you know, talking about Democrats not knowing how to act like Democrats, here's another fun one with regard to Max Baucus of Montana.
Oh. We'll see him out.
Yeah, The Hill is reporting that Max Baucus said yesterday that he hasn't made up his mind on how he'll vote on Sonia Sotomayor.
Oh, for heaven's sake. What is with him?
He was contacted by the Hill newspaper about how he would vote on Sonia Sotomayor, and he said, I have no idea. I haven't paid any attention, and I haven't announced. I've been so busy with health care, it's under consideration. I'll certainly let you know when I vote, but right now I can't tell you.
Brother. Well, you know, now I did see Tennessee, or I don't know, if I guess I saw him, Bernie Sanders talking about the Blue Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they had did a study about the people that they were representing, because a lot of people thought, well, they're representing people, you know, that don't have anything to worry about, you know, mostly Republicans and so forth. And he said, actually, there are people that are losing a lot of jobs in their places and in their precincts, or not precincts, but whatever, districts. And he said a lot of them are going to be losing their health care. And he said they're going to have to answer to those people. So it's something, it is very selfish on their part, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I think selfish is an appropriate word. I can think of some that are far less appropriate that I'm not in.
Oh, well. The View is kind of, I don't know how to describe. I missed a couple weeks because they were off one week, and I thought they were off like 4th of July weekend, but I guess they weren't. And I tried to watch it on the Internet, and I could never figure out how to watch those programs. But something Barbara Walters said that kind of teed me off here a while back. She was talking about, you know, when Bill Maher was saying that Barack Obama should get some stiff in his back or whatever. And she said, well, now that there's a liberal talking about criticizing him, you just don't hear that. And I thought, well, Barbara Walters, you must not listen to any kind of liberal radio show, because he's criticized all the time.
Yeah.
We criticize our own.
You know,
That's the way we are, you know.
And we do that because we're intellectually honest, Juanita.
Right. I mean, we want them to do better.
We want them to be what the country needs.
Right.
But it seems more and more. You remember that essay that Dr. Bill sent me a week or so ago from the Boston Globe? Then I read it. I think I read it on air. Maybe.
I think I remember, but
well, he made the argument. The author did, that the American system is not set up in such a way as to deal with a crisis.
Oh, no, that's right.
And that has been in the back of my mind with every one of these issues ever since. We can't deal with health care. The only thing that the American government, as it is currently structured, can do is maintain the status quo. And if the other side shifts the status quo rightward, that's what we're stuck with.
Yeah.
I heard it, okay? Let me give you an example. I heard it time and time again when I was in Washington. Virtually every meeting we had on the Senate side of the Hill, as we advocated for S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act, we were asked one question. It didn't matter if it was a Democrat or a Republican's office we were talking to. How do Byrd and Rockefeller feel about this? And I'm not, you know, I didn't go there to BS anybody. I said, let me tell it to you straight. They're openly hostile.
Yeah.
They're happy for West Virginia to be destroyed and for Appalachia to be destroyed. It doesn't bother them that people are drinking poison. Okay? And it was explained to us. They said, you know, because, you know, senators prefer to defer to local senators, because they don't want other senators coming and messing in their business.
Yeah.
And I said, let me clarify one thing for you. Byrd and Rockefeller, I said, Rockefeller's openly hostile to us, but 70-80% of West Virginia citizens oppose mountaintop removal. And so there is a clear divergence between doing the will of the people and doing the will of a coal company.
Yeah.
And what Byrd and Rockefeller are doing does not represent the will of the people. And it's true. And so, that's what you're up against anytime you...
I want to ask you, what did your What did Bill Nelson have to say, or did you talk to him?
We went to his office, and he didn't know much. Apparently, they are unaware of it.
What?
But I made specific reference to dear friends that I have in Florida who would be more than happy to let Senator Nelson know exactly how they feel on the issue.
Yeah.
So a little handwritten letter to his office would be mighty nice.
Well, you know what? I wrote one, and I tried to send my copy. I've got a new printer, different printer, and I cannot find the file to print out. I mean, I don't.
Well, don't worry about it. But now that we've done that, now that we've been to his office, anybody in Florida within the reach of my voice needs to let Bill Nelson know, if you're willing to be part of this fight, needs to let Bill Nelson know that you support the S-696.
Yeah.
But, you know, they his assistant was very polite and was very pleasant and asked us what Rockefeller and Byrd thought of it.
Yeah. Well, what you've got there, Bob, it affects the whole country. It doesn't just affect West Virginia. Y'all are the ones that bearing the biggest brunt of it.
And that's what we tried to point out is this is not a West Virginia issue.
Right.
This is not a Kentucky or a Tennessee or a Virginia issue. This affects the entire southeastern United States and, in fact, the entire nation.
Yeah, and other countries, too. Maybe the whole world.
Exactly.
But, I mean, you can't say that. But
Right.
But anyway.
Well, Juanita, it's been a wonderful conversation. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, and tell Mr. Ferg I said hello.
Well, I sure will, and I don't know. I guess I got to try to find clothing that makes me look a little less congressional or something.
Yeah.
And I did see my congressman on the Hill. You'll appreciate this. I saw my congressman.
Which one?
Nick Choe-Rahal from the 3rd District of West Virginia.
Yeah.
I saw him out on the street, and I just went right up to him, shook his hand. How you doing? Good to see you here. And it took him a minute to realize who I was, and the blood drained out of his face.
Uh-huh.
Well, what brings you? Oh, we're just ending mountaintop removal, that's all. Yeah.
Did he?
All of a sudden, he looked like he was shaking hands with a snake.
Yeah.
But it was a good moment. It was a very good moment. Because I'm still waiting for Congressman Rahal to get right on health care. Of course, it'd be nice if he'd get right about mountaintop removal, too.
Oh, yeah.
At least I don't have Michelle Bachmann or Marsha Blackburn for a representative in Congress.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
We got some few doozies down here.
Oh, you got some winners. You got Ileana Ross Leightman, and she's crazier than an outhouse rat. And you've got a handful of crazy down there.
Yeah, we got one woman. I forget her name. She's got three names too. She's like an older blonde, and she always gets up, and she kind of reminds me of Foxy. You know, from Carolina, she gets up every once in a while.
Oh, yeah, Virginia Fox. Double
you
A.
Know, how, yeah. You know, she tells how easy it is to get the...
Yeah, and there are no uninsured in America. Yeah, she just lives in this little white dream world. God.
Yeah, that's it. You know, people are never out of their comfort zone, you know. And, you know, I said, I guess it's something to be thankful for, to get out of your comfort zone, because it makes you think.
Yeah, it does that.
Hopefully. Not all people of those. You know, if you're, like you said, you were born leaning left. I'll let your little thesis. I love that. And I always think, I've always kind of seen things on a different kilter all my life.
Well, Juanita, I will talk to you soon, dear, and just hang in there.
I will.
It's tough sometimes, I know.
But, you know, sometimes it's good to talk to one another about things.
It's always good to talk to one another about these things. That's why the horn exists.
Yeah. Okay, well, you take care.
All right. Bye, Juanita.
Bye night.
From Central Florida, our View correspondent, that's Juanita, and we roll along. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? I hear me in delay. There you are. Gene?
Hello?
Yeah, Gene. Gene, I think you've got phone problems.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there. Okay, that's our other news ninja. That's Gene out in Oregon. He PM'd me to let me know that he was on the line, said he might be having phone troubles, and I think he is.
Hello?
Gene? Gene? Are you there? Okay.
Hi, back.
Okay. So, with that in mind, we'll take a break. We've got one coming. A little update for you. You remember some time back we talked about the story of Carl Brent Worthington, who prayed his daughter to death. He was found guilty. And he was sentenced. And for those of you who care about children, this is the story of little Ava Worthington. She had a short and sad and miserable life. Bear in mind, it was a short, sad, and miserable life that the pro-life people don't give a damn about because she was already out of the womb. She had failure to thrive. She was five. She was very young, and the Worthingtons, Mr. Worthington and his wife, are members of a bizarre, well, how many of them aren't, but members of a religious cult. But then again, how many of them aren't? That eschewed medical science in favor of magic, namely prayer. And they prayed their daughter to death, Ava Worthington. Instead of taking her for medical assistance for a cyst on her neck that impeded breathing and eating and led to her getting a fatal dose of pneumonia, they prayed over her. She died on a Sunday evening after family and church members had prayed over her and anointed her with olive oil. The state medical examiner said that she could have easily been saved with antibiotics. At the trial, Mrs. Worthington was let off the hook for the murder of her daughter. Oh, I'm sorry, the manslaughter, negligent homicide. He was but the daddy, because, you know, women are to be silent and submissive to their husbands, you know, because Jesus said so. Oregon City, Oregon is the dateline. Clackamas County, Oregon. I've probably mispronounced that. Carl Brent Worthington was sentenced today for deliberately ignoring the medical needs of his daughter and, for all intents and purposes, killing her. Carl Brent Worthington has been sentenced to 2 months in jail and 5 years of formal probation. In sentencing this killer in the name of the Prince of Peace, in sentencing this killer to 2 months in jail for killing his daughter, Judge Stephen Maurer said today that the sentence reflects the seriousness of the crime and the duty of society to protect the health and welfare of children. Well, if that's the case, then the crime wasn't very serious, and society has no damn duty whatsoever to protect the health and welfare of children. Thank you, Judge Stephen Maurer. What a light in the what a leading light of jurisprudence you must surely be. Sweet Jesus. Or as the shortest verse in the New Testament goes, Jesus wept. Sorry, bastard. Oh, but as part of the sentence, Worthington's probation officer has to be allowed to check in on the family's children through the course of the 5 years. That includes a 5-year-old son and an unborn child who have to have a doctor's medical examination. Here's the fun part. The Worthingtons get to select the doctor. This must be a real victory for the pro-life people. You know, the so-called pro-life religion industry evangelicals are forever screaming about how fetuses are real people. And they want to put abortion doctors in jail. And they applaud when physicians who attend to women's medical needs are slaughtered in their churches. And they will view this as a heroic protection of the First Amendment. Yeah, there it is. Ava was 15 months old when she was killed. Because make no mistake, she was killed. Can you imagine having a 15-month-old innocent in your care who is desperately sick with pneumonia, whom you try to cure by dribbling olive oil on her head and mumbling to some invisible, unreal, imaginary thing? Because you see, if you or I did that and said, well, you know, we rubbed her head with some linguine because we thought that the flying spaghetti monster would cure her, we'd never see the outside of a prison wall again. But all you gotta do is cite Jesus. And as has been the case for the last 2,000 years, you can kill at will. Hey, is this Gene?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Kind of bummed. I found out I have a personal little health care story that I hadn't realized. And I need to call my senators and congressmen with this, although I'm a little bit nervous. See, my caregiver here, you have to have 80 hours of care a month in order to have health insurance. And if you're below that as far as your hours, the state, because they don't want to pay for uninsured people, won't pay the caregiver on this as far as their service. So I've been having to track the hours that my caregiver has, and right at the moment, and I'm hoping this will change, because, of course, in order to do this, I'm going to have to stop being so damned independent.
Yeah, what a hell of a choice! What a hell of a choice to have forced on you.
Yeah. So, you know, I realize that, you know, it still wouldn't be very nice for the caregiver to lose her hours and go down to, because what she's got now is a little more than that, more than 80. But but still she wouldn't have the health care issue. And it's like, gee, this is a kind of a conundrum, you know, a real, real pain in the ass, you know. And so we're thinking next month, which starts tomorrow, is we're going to be basically reworking the entire house. And I don't know what we're going to do after that, as far as using those hours up. So we'll see how that goes. Personally, you know, I got this, and getting back to this healthcare thing, John Fox last weekend said that, you know, if we didn't pass the healthcare thing, the country would be finished. And, you know, I thought about what he said, and I kind of agreed, you know. But now I was thinking today, I was, you know, just thinking about some random things I'd heard. And he's like, you know what, it really will, because basically people will not live without some kind of health care. So their option is to go back to the States and get it, right?
Right.
By state. So basically, if they start doing that, you can probably believe that the insurance industry is going to do something like, well, this precludes interstate commerce and all kinds of crap. So, and instead of putting this thing that they've gotten on the federal level, they'll put it to each individual state. And pretty soon, I'm thinking people will be angry enough that they're going to say, we don't care anymore. You know, being, I pardon me if I sound a little conspiratorial. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
But it's like, if people get frustrated enough, it's like, heck, we're going to bag this federal gig and just go our own way. And sort of, it makes me mad because then it makes, I know you, I hate this idea. I really hate this idea. But it makes me mad because it's going to be, even if it's not sort of like secessionist stuff, they're going to, the right wing is going to make it into that. So we get tagged with that too. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And it's like, I'm bummed about this. I'm completely I could just scream. I didn't know the bugger got only 2 months. I thought he only got a year. the face healer guy.
Well, no, he could have gotten, I think, up to a year or maybe 5 years or something. But no, he got. Do you realize that we have, and I imagine Oregon's the same way, we have stiffer sentences for shooting livestock?
Oh, yeah.
We have stiffer sentences for animal cruelty than that.
Of course, but remember, there's I don't know about the animal cruelty, but the livestock, there's a monetary value. In.
Yeah, they're worth something, them livestock.
Yeah. Whereas a 15-year-old little girl, well, you know, not really. I mean, maybe she could have had a good life ahead of her, but it's not proven that she would have amounted to anything. I mean, look at the parents, but shut up. I'm sorry. I'm just evil tonight. I'm laughing, but it's like, inside of my, I'm screaming. I guess I'm glad you had I wouldn't call it a good time in Washington, D.C., but,
Well, you know, Gene, every time I go, I go with the old idealism that was taught to me as a child, and I always come back. I come back with it severely bruised, but it apparently regenerates in the meantime, and I can go back with it in place again. I wish there was some way to get the right thing done.
Yeah.
But that's facile and simplistic on my part, Gene, because, you know, the weird thing is, and this is just because of the way my eyeballs work, I guess. Mm-hmm. I kept looking around at people on the Hill the whole time thinking, I wonder which one of those is a sleazy-ass pharmaceutical lobbyist or some miserable POS healthcare insurance lobbyist who's trying to screw me even as I'm walking past him.
Well, when I was there back in 2007, the thing that got me, and it's a really weird thing to get to a person, was I couldn't, because I'm used to, you know, I've done a little bit of traveling, but I'm used to just, you know, pretty easy, simple things. You know, we were in the hotel at the, on there on K Street, I don't really want to say the name, but the bellhops and stuff all have uniforms, and they're all so nice and servile, and I felt just so cocooned even as a visitor there. It's like, boy, I can see where a congressman or a senator doesn't have really any kind of idea what it's like out in the real world anymore. They're just, they're taken care of. And I was disgusted with it. I know it's funny because I'd saved up for that trip for like 6 months. I went into debt for that trip. I'm still paying it off. And I was so disappointed in it. I'd like to go back to just see if I can, if it was really just me or if it's really that way. But I mean, it just, I wasn't impressed. And what would get me is I'd drive down 9th and K, so I think I would walk down 9th Street, and right there, a block away, is this huge Chinese bank with those kanji letters on the front, which I guess it's okay, but I mean, it's like, it doesn't seem like it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm a provincial. Am I a provincial to think that seeing a foreign bank that is taller than a lot of the buildings around it in your nation's capital when you're not Chinese? Am I wrong in thinking there's something wrong with that picture?
No. At ground level, I don't think you are. In essence. You know, I guess anybody who's in a building can buy the naming rights. I mean, look at the Sears Tower.
Yeah.
It should be cause for disturbance, unless, of course, you know, you're a right winger who thinks that this country, if it's good for business, it's good for America.
I guess, but I was
exhausted at the end of the day. And was just sitting on the bed in the motel room and turned the television on and was flicking past PBS and caught the very tail end of what looked like it was a fascinating program called The Story of Money.
Oh, okay.
And I got to go back and watch that because I got to tell you the truth, when I first landed on it, I saw a video of, you know, that digital stock ticker with the numbers that just constantly, and my eyes began to glaze over, and I went, oh no. But then I paid attention, and he apparently used this word that he made up, chimerica.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to look this up. I've been.
And he related that word to the word chimera. Or chimera.
Chimera, yeah.
And sort of equated the two. I think I got to go back and rewatch.
Yeah, it sounds like a good one. I'll have to go look for myself. Well, I'm glad you're back.
Well, I am too. I was going nuts because every evening I kept thinking, wow, if I just get back, but then there was the metro ride. And
well, the metro's fun.
Yeah, well, it is, unless you're wearing a business-type suit and you get in the last car on the line and the air conditioner's out.
Oh, that's true. The other thing I didn't really care about the metro is, unlike, I guess I'm spoiled here in Oregon because they actually announce the stops here, so you know what stop you're at when you want to get off.
Well, they sort of do that on the D.C. metro, but you have to have a special hearing facility that makes it intelligible to you over the din of the crappy audio system.
Yeah.
Listen to that. This is the first stop on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And God only knows. I mean, I'm getting off in Chinatown. I'm getting off in Vienna. You don't know.
Mm-hmm. I remember it was quite the trip. I was glad I had it, but I remember when I was, because the thing that always gets me is when you go into the DC, I'm sorry to be so personal and stuff, but when you go into the DC subway, the platform where you actually wait for the train and you see the enamel-colored walls, and I feel like I'm in somebody's mouth with the color of those walls, the off-white, you know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute, it's weird.
Design based on the Book of Jonah.
Something, I mean, it's like, this is bizarre. But I do have to say, I like the way they run their ticketing thing, because you don't really have to, you only have to buy the one ticket, and then you can actually add stuff onto it. Instead of having to...
And we added and added and added and added. Yeah, I calculated. I think our Metro tab for the trip was... I think it came to about $150.
Shoot, man. Maybe I don't think that's just the mix.
Because, it was five people doing $1.80 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Five people doing $360 a day.
Okay.
No, not $150. What am I thinking? I'm trying to do math on the fly. I don't know. You know better than to make me do math on the fly, Gene.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry.
It was more like $50.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad, but it was. I'm sounding real lazy here, but
that's still pretty expensive when you because I can go, about. $3 or $4 to go through it, get an all-zone ticket to the max. Of course, that if it's an all-day pass, I'd have to go look. Maybe it would be comparable. I don't know. I'd have to look. But, man. Well, I'm glad you're home. I guess.
And hopefully it'll be sane. It'll be sane next week. But I tell you what, the weirdness is going to ramp up again, Gene, because I'm getting ready for Netroots Nation, and this is going to. This is the closest that the horn has ever come to something approaching the logistics involved with the Normandy invasion that I've ever seen.
Well,
By the way, I just saw something that Lottie put in the chat room. If one person has the cold or a flu, everyone in the car now has it. Up on Capitol Hill, there are wash your hands, swine flu warnings all over the buildings. And we were told somewhere along the way that a couple of pages had gotten it, and everybody, of course, was nervous. Yeah, of course, I came out of the bathroom and out of the men's room and just walked up to Agnes and went, oink. And she didn't take it well.
No.
I think if Agnes had her way, instead of carrying a little can of that pepper spray, she'd just carry a little can of Lysol and just, hose people down.
There is one last thing I want to bring up. I'll tell you this real quick. I saw, I think I put it up there. Garrett sent it to you on, like, your Facebook page or whatever about the Huffington Post article about the book review called Blackout.
Yes.
You got that?
Yes.
So, that's another reason. All this crap they pull. To all this work just to make sure they can keep 20 years left of coal.
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad I'm not in West Virginia. I put my head...
You have a right to be glad.
Yeah, no, well, not I'm not trying to offend West Virginians, but...
No, believe me. Look, it's a discussion Agnes and I have had about... the choices we made many years ago, we thought we were doing the right thing by being here.
Although, to be honest, I mean, heck, I get you going anyway, so I guess I better go ahead and just put my head right through that screen as it is. Okay.
Take care, Gene.
I'll see you later.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
News Ninja Gene also calling from Oregon. And I tell you what, we'll take a little break and come back with the remainder of the conversation for the evening. Which amounts to about 30 minutes or so. I need to reiterate, this is, of course, the 31st day of July. That means August starts tomorrow. It was another tough fundraising July, and thanks to everybody who did pitch in. But we're going to do Netroots Nation, and I'm going to be there hell or high water. If I have to take, four boxes of saltines and a couple of jars of peanut butter to eat on while I'm there, I'm going, and you're going because I'm going. Okay. It would be nice not to have to do that. We are going to bring you every word of every session at Netroots Nation. And there's going to be some stuff that you want to hear. And frankly, it's going to take a heck of an effort. There's still equipment that we need. Guy James is coming. I think, although we haven't formalized everything, I think Rick Goodner's coming. And hopefully, you know, I plan to be there with the family so that they can help, so that even, you know, so that the ranks of Horn intern junior grade can be expanded by two more, so that they can run streams and that they can sit and they can hear and they can learn all this stuff in Pittsburgh. We are trying to get a sponsor for it, but that has proven very, very difficult at this point. So the only thing I can say is if you want Netroots Nation, if you want the Horn to cover Netroots Nation, and you want it to happen well, we need your support. We need your support badly. We'll make it through August. There will be an August on the Horn. And frankly, if we are successful at Netroots Nation and have everything that we need in order to do Netroots Nation, we can perhaps expand the audience and make it more likely that we will make our continued survival even more likely. But we gotta get there. You know, our monthly fundraising goal is about $2,000. We hit it once in a while. This is more on top. A lot of the months that we don't make it, we make it up ourselves one way or the other, the difference. Frankly, if we do that, we don't have the difference to make up, for the trip to Pittsburgh. And this isn't some ego trip for me. This is a trip because there are things that are going to happen there that are going to be as important as anything that can get heard this year. Because the liberal wing of the internet is going to be there. And you're going to get to hear from people that you want to hear from. But we can't do it on good intentions, and God knows I can't do it on good looks. Our buddy David in Tennessee wrote in and said, "Hey, you want to look less congressional? Just go with that Mox with no socks look." Because I love doing Docksiders with no socks, and yeah. Mox with no socks. It sounds like a Dr. Seuss book. I may have to get to work. I heard from our buddy Reverbo earlier. He's our critic at large, of course, talking about the religious insanity in that video. And, well, you know, St. Luke mentions Barack Obama as the Antichrist by name. Seekers, I've got it all right here. With not much more craziness, this could have been written by the Fire Sign Theater. Here's one old fan hoping they're planning on doing just something like this. And from David in Tennessee, he thought you might enjoy this as well. He said, "You only thought that guy was crazy, that religion industry guy was crazy. Check this out. Amazing Bible prophecies about President Obama."
Welcome to Revelation Unraveled. I'm your host, William Tapley, also known as the third eagle of the apocalypse and the co-prophet of the end times. The topic for today's program is the presidency.
Wow, he's got an inflated view of himself. Third eagle of the apocalypse and co-prophet of the end times? Whew, man.
...of our newly elected president, Barack Obama. A month or so before the election, I warned the American people that Barack Obama would be the last president of the United States and the last king of the South. Since my first prophecy has come true, that is, that he was elected president, my next two prophecies also will come true.
Man, you can't challenge that kind of logic. You just can't do it.
Because Barack Obama is found in Bible prophecy. In Daniel chapter 7, he is the personification of the leopard, which comes up out of the sea. The leopard, of course, is the United States of America.
Well, anybody knows that.
And he is also found in Daniel chapter 11, where he is pictured as the last king of the South.
Really? King of the South? What? South side of Chicago? He is a White Sox fan, I guess. Okay.
The last king of the South will provoke the last king of the North, who is the premier of Russia, into World War III.
Oh, well, here we go again. This guy's apparently just trying to coattail on Hal Lindsey.
Why is Barack Obama considered the last king of the South? Because his forebears came from...
No. Why do you consider him the last king of the South? Because, you know, I haven't... There's not a lot of billboards out there, you know, the Barack Obama king of the South. And, you know, I know some redneck boys down Alabama that would take real umbrage against you, O Eagle of the Apocalypse. And they might hand you your ass for talking that kind of talk down that way.
Kenya, which is due south of Jerusalem. And, of course, Moscow is due north of Jerusalem.
There are no cows in Moscow.
The reason Barack Obama was elected, because not enough Americans prayed and fasted before the election, myself included. In fact, the Lord gave me a severe case of arthritis in my left shoulder.
Don't!
Because I did not pray and fast enough for my country. The Lord also revealed...
What is it? Prayer and fasting, now with glucosamine and chondroitin.
Something else to me before the election, which I could not let people know until now. On this program, I will reveal how the Lord wants us to act during the years that Obama is President of the United States. The Lord showed me that the presidency of Barack Obama will be similar to the fate of the Israelites, as found in Jeremiah chapter 27.
Well, that just can't be good.
Where they had to accept the yoke of King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon.
But not the egg white.
Jeremiah tells the Israelites that they must accept...
You know, because Barack Obama, he ain't got no egg white.
...accept the yoke of the king, and that things are going to get worse before they get better. The same is true today. Do not listen to the false prophets who think that America will survive the Great Tribulation. Our fate is that of Babylon in the book of Revelation. We will be burned with fire. However, if enough Americans pray and fast from this day forward,
they'll starve.
We can mitigate the punishments which God will mete out to us. Let's read what Jeremiah...
That God, he is one mean... He is a mean mother...
Jeremiah says about the captivity of the Jews under King Nebuchadnezzar. In these passages, we will discover that King Nebuchadnezzar's authority...
Now, wait a minute. Wasn't it King Nebuchadnezzar that wound up... That God was mean to him, too, and made him batshit crazy, and he went out and turned him into a billy goat or a mule or a donkey or something, and he ran around eating grass for a while? What I wouldn't pay... What I would not pay to see Newt Gingrich, wait, he's already an ass. Okay, turned into a, he no woman's safe around him, so he's not a goat either. What I wouldn't give to see David, any of those repig-licking bastards running around, but they already run around. Let's get back to the prophecy.
Came from God himself. Let's look at chapter 27, verse 6. Now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon,
whom I will turn batshit crazy and will wind up eating daisies.
My servant. God is saying here that King Nebuchadnezzar, although a tyrant, was an instrument of God's will.
Oh dear, we've been down this road with Pastor Hagee, haven't we? Wasn't it Pastor Hagee who said that Hitler was an agent of God's will? Just checking.
That's why the Israelites had to accept the yoke of King Nebuchadnezzar.
But not the egg whites. There's got to be a cholesterol problem in the Old Testament like you couldn't believe.
The same is true for us in America. We must respect the office of the presidency. We must accept our legitimately elected president, President Barack Obama. In the next verse, verse 7 from chapter 27, I am going to substitute the word people for kingdom. And the people which will not serve Nebuchadnezzar, and that will not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, these people I will punish with sword, famine, and pestilence. Now I have a bit of advice for radio talk show hosts.
Oh boy!
Some of which I listen to on a regular basis.
I can't wait.
Do not criticize President Obama in the way that the mainstream media criticized President Bush. There is no doubt that he is going to put heavy burdens on the American people. But the Lord is telling me and you that we must accept these burdens if we want to survive these years of great tribulation. In chapter 27, verse 14, the prophet Jeremiah writes, "Hearken not to the prophet."
But this guy's a prophet. Why isn't he doing it? What's he need Jeremiah for?
"...who say to you, you shall not serve the king of Babylon, for they prophesy a lie to you. For I have not sent them, and they prophesy a lie in my name. Do not listen to the false prophets who say that Barack Obama does not have legitimate authority. He is an instrument of God Almighty himself. He has a role to play, as predicted in Bible prophecy. We cannot change Bible prophecy. Our best hope as Christians is to accept the legitimate authority of President Barack Obama. In conclusion, we as Christians must understand that Bible prophecy will be fulfilled. But we also have the hope that Jesus gave us, that those days will be shortened for the sake of the elect. Remember also what St. John warns about Babylon, which is England and America. We must go out from her."
I can't take any more. I just can't take any more. England and America or Babylon? And we're supposed to make stuff better with this crap going on? You tell me how that happens. I guess it happens only as long as we don't give up. A note here from our pal Jude of Women Standing out in Seattle. She says, "Afternoon, Bob. I for one am most grateful for all the footwork you do in calling forth to the capital people the necessity of all of our need for clean air, which we know means so much more. The profound damage on so many levels of mountaintop mining must become an ongoing mantra, which you and yours are giving it all you have. It is shocking in this day and age that the fight has to continue with so many good minds at work that if allowed would develop and put into action numerous alternative energy avenues. The energy alternatives are present in so many areas now, yet it requires individuals with a consciousness and an understanding of the need to protect this pale blue dot. When I speak about consciousness, I must be clear. They are individuals who carry inside the awareness of a higher purpose. They identify when actions affect others in a negative way, and realizing this fact are naturally drawn in the direction that causes no harm. It becomes impossible to ignore any situation that, when acknowledged, diminishes either another human being or the care of this planet, the Earth, that we all share. It is a disciplined walk as it takes one outside of themselves, while at the same time calls to go deeper into oneself. I see it as the duality of the human consciousness enfolding self-awareness and accountability, and to be held accountable, I believe, requires humility, the fertile ground where growth can occur. We do this together, stepping forward not only physically but also collectively in our unified calling to raise the critical mass. My best to you and yours. Peace. Jude of Women Standing in Seattle." And maybe that was the message I was looking for. Maybe that was the message I needed tonight. Because it is difficult to realize how next to impossible it is to bring about positive, good-oriented, decent, people-focused, improvements in this country via the government structured such as it is. I thank you, Jude, because I think I needed that very, very badly this evening. Very badly indeed. We understand the forces that are arrayed against us. We understand the insanity of the people who live in perpetual darkness, people in the evangelical religion industry, corporatists, people who will end their days suddenly realizing that nothing that they did in their lives counted for anything, save for the fact that they did the bidding of someone else and were rewarded for harming others. And like I said, I walked around Capitol Hill and you never knew, looking from, unless they had a microphone in their hand and told you they were from the College Republicans or some BS, you never knew which ones were the ones arrayed against you. And it was strange that way. And the weirdos surrounding Mike Pence of Indiana, as he talked about the necessity for protecting the unborn, when he himself does not give a tinker's damn about the living and the born, who by his own actions make sure that the agony of the living and the born are increased day by day, hour by hour, and minute by minute. And looking at the people surrounding him, and all those men, no women, all those men standing behind him, not a uterus in the crowd, talking about how we can only preserve the goodness and righteousness and Christianity of our nation. Sorry, he doesn't talk like that. He's from Indiana. By making sure that women don't have adequate access to care for their reproductive systems. And by extension, making sure that all Americans have no access to medical care when they need it. Ye generation of vipers. Mother. And all of it based upon nothing more than a belief in some vindictive million-billion-year-old juvenile delinquent in the sky. It's astonishing. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. And that's the wrong song. God, that makes me crazy. Oh, screw the break. Let's just keep rolling. Only about 20 minutes left in the show anyway. I sincerely do hope that what we're going to be attempting to do at Netroots Nation is important to you. Yeah, Chicky Patriot in the chat room. It's all about control of women, Bob. Yeah, it is. And they use their little magic book. Wives, be submissive and subservient to your husband. Something like, I think that's in the 42nd flip-floppians or something. And there is no end to the damage that they will do. Justified by 2,000-year-old babblings of people who might not even have been sane. There's a memo out, you know, according to a report from Politico today, noting the fact that Democrats around the country are constantly being assaulted now. One of the most recent manifestations of these assaults took place with Representative Frank Cradaville, Democrat from Maryland, outside his district office in Salisbury, Maryland, on the 28th of July. Some right-wingers hanged him in effigy. They took a picture of his head, printed it out, and put a blue shirt and khakis on it, built a little little makeshift gallows, and hanged him. Why? Because of his position on health care. Chris Van Hollen is the chairman of the DCCC, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He said in a statement, "This shocking and despicable act of hate has no place in any debate, and Republicans must condemn it." Oh, come on, Congressman Van Hollen. Wake up and smell the poison. Republicans won't condemn this. If they do, they'll snicker up their sleeves after they do, because they're Republicans! Eliminationism is what they do, Congressman! And if they could, they would gladly go further than doing it in effigy. They would do it in reality. Right-wing protesters also surrounded Representative Tim Bishop, a Democrat from New York, and forced police officers to escort him to his car for safety. Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works, these are the people behind the teabagging affairs, are behind this stuff, too. A memo has leaked from a guy named Bob McGuffey. He's a volunteer with the Freedom Works website, Tea Party Patriots. This memo he authored says, titled Rocking the Town Hall's Best Practices, a political action memo. We here in Fairfield County, Connecticut, conducted an action at Congressman Jim Himes' town hall meeting in May 2009. We believe there are some best practices which emerged from the event and our experience. Best practices? What, does he work for an accounting firm? Probably. Which could be useful to activists in just about any district where their congressperson has supported the socialist agenda of the Democratic leadership in Washington. Here are some of those best practices. Artificially inflate your numbers. Spread out in the hall and try to be in the front half. The objective is to put the rep on the defensive with your questions and follow-up. The rep should be made to feel that a majority, and if not a significant portion of at least the audience, opposes the socialist agenda of Washington. Be disruptive early and often. You need to rock the boat early in the rep's presentation. Watch for an opportunity to yell out and challenge the rep's statements early. Try to rattle him, not have an intelligent debate. The goal is to rattle him, get him off his prepared script and agenda. If he says something outrageous, stand up and shout out and sit right back down. Look for these opportunities before he even takes questions. Meanwhile, we put on our little t-shirts, and we carry our little signs, and we go and we peacefully protest, demanding things like Medicare for All Now, H.R. 676. And if you think this stuff is the product of addled, agitated minds, think again. Representative Pete Sessions is a Repiglican from Texas. He's chairman of the National Republican Campaign Committee. What did I say a few minutes ago about Chris Van Hollen, DCCC chairman's statement that the Repiglicans must repudiate such actions as hanging a man in effigy? Well, Representative Pete Sessions, Repiglican of Texas, chairman of the NRCC, endorsed the strategy involved in that memo. He told Politico that the days of civil town hall meetings are over! I don't know that we have even yet begun to understand how dangerous the right wing are. Another group has been stone-busted for forging dummied-up letters about environmental issues. Tom Perriello is a freshman Democrat from Virginia. It turns out his office has received at least six letters from two Charlottesville-based minority organizations voicing opposition to the incredibly weak, almost possibly ineffective ACES bill. Yeah, that's how low they'll... Yeah, of course the Republicans will cheat. It turns out that the letters were forged by a D.C.-based consulting firm that has a long history of dirty tricks. These letters weren't on plain paper. They had letterhead and made-up identities. They claimed to be from minority organizations in Virginia, including the Virginia chapter of the NAACP. Bonner and Associates is the AstroTurf group responsible for the letters. They said they had a temporary worker who was caught doing it and fired. They fired him. Sure, they did. What else has Bonner and Associates done? The founder of Bonner and Associates is a guy named Jack Bonner. He bragged in 1994 that his group has no ideological or political bent. He said, if you've got the money and need some regular people to flog your issue, Bonner will find them for you. Meanwhile, in 1986, the firm got caught in a fraud scheme against you and me, we the people, the United States government, as they attempted to hang on to a contract. What did he say? We'll find you some regular people to flog your issue. You know where they find the regular people, it turned out? Well, when they were busted in 1986, they were fraudulently submitting names from phone books, yearbooks, agency employee books. And just as they did today, they said, well, you know, we fired the person responsible. They took money from Philip Morris during the early 1990s to fight a workplace smoking ban. They got about $1.5 million to solicit 7,000 letters to OSHA from small businesses. They worked for Big Pharma to kill Maryland legislation that would have affected prescription drug laws by faxing dozens of community leaders with a petition that was meant to appear to be grassroots, including grammatical errors and a handwritten cover letter. One community leader said, I wish they'd take off the masks. If the drug industry wants to organize people at the grassroots, they should be honest. Come on. Having been caught, Bonner and Associates issued the following. We take our business very seriously. A temporary employee lied to us and, contrary to our policies, sent these letters. We, no one else, we on our own found this out. We immediately fired the person. We then called those affected, explained what it had. There is, if you talk to a trial lawyer, he'll tell you that sometimes a lawyer will say something that he knows is going to draw an objection, knows is going to be moved to be stricken, and he'll apologize to the court for having let it out. And, sir, it is true that you molest farm animals. Objection! Move to strike! So ordered. The jury will disregard. But the lawyer who did it knows a very, very old saying. You can't unring a bell. And Bonner and Associates knows that, too. The NAACP's response to having been a victim of forgery and fraud, the NAACP said, the NAACP is appalled that an organization like Bonner and Associates would stoop to these depths to deceive Congress. In this case, Bonner and Associates are exploiting the African-American community to achieve their misdirected goal. God almighty, it is not a misdirected goal. It's not misdirected, it's intentionally directed.
This is what they mean to do. The African-American community, the Latino community, the poor people community of all color are targets in this. If the right wing thought that they could get away with it, they would shoot people on the streets. And some of them already are, whether they get away with it or not. Every time that some wingnut argues that Barack Obama is the Antichrist, or that Representative Cradiville is hung in effigy, hanged, the intent is the same. To weaponize some individual in the right wing in the hopes of accomplishing what Shakespeare called bloody-handed murder. Such is the nature of the Republican Party. Meanwhile, David Vitter's out there making announcements with regard to people who are in his own party. Remember, David Vitter's C Street. Responding to George Voinovich of Ohio's complaint that was mentioned earlier that the GOP had been taken over by Southerners and that his party has too many Jim DeMints and Tom Coburns, Vitter stepped out to defend, called Voinovich a moderate, really wishy-washy Republican. And then said, and I remind you that God is a God of irony, if he is any God at all. David Vitter, patron of hookers, fetishist apparently, hypocrite most particularly, David Vitter said, I'm on the side of conservatives getting back to core conservative values. Really? Being a married man and hiring hookers to put diapers on you and abuse you is a core conservative value, Senator Vitter? There are a lot of us from the South who hold these values, which I think the party is supposed to be about. We strayed from them in the past few years, and that's why we performed so badly in the national elections. God of irony. But that's okay, because he'll probably get reelected. So I guess that's the program for the evening. Thank you for everyone. Thank you to everyone who came into the chat room and chatted a while. We had a very nice crowd in there this evening. Thank you for your calls, your emails. We'll be back Monday. Please, if you've got anything spare laying around, consider what we are attempting to do to increase the visibility and audibility and awareness of what the horn is all about, so that others can participate in this ongoing conversation. Please, if you've got anything spare laying about, remember what it's going to take to make Netroots Nation happen. Because it's going to take a mighty fair bit. Thank you to everyone who does help to keep us on the air. And I know I ask a lot. But please understand that everybody associated with the horn appreciates the sacrifices you make to make sure that there is at least one more outlet out there that isn't corporate media, that isn't for-profit media, and has something approaching a candid conversation and a candid dialogue about what it means to be here where we are right now. Thank you. To those who are unable, thank you as well for your words of encouragement, for your input, your ideas, your phone calls, emails, chat room,
participation. Thank you. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who will be making this little miracle at Netroots Nation happen on his end. It's going to be quite a challenge. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to John Fox, who will play his own role in all of this to make sure that I don't completely lose my mind and that I get wires where wires need to be. He'll be active in this. Thank you to Peter Godbold, who does so much to make our IT all work. Cracks whips over computers, and computers look at him and say, "Yes, sir." Welcome home from the hospital, Peter. We all love you dearly, and we're so glad to know that you're home. And we are gladder still that you are among those that we call friend. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, Coal River Mountain Watch, who have also done a magnificent part in keeping this exercise in the First Amendment on the air for so long now. Indeed, indeed, the bravest, hardest working people I know. And you know why I say that, because you know what they do. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, y'all.
Cussin' with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! merciful goodness, it is good to be back home. I have been out of the loop, off the radar, and in D.C. for the last 4 days. And what a trip it was. Thank you, first of all, thank you to every last one of you who took the time to handwrite a letter to your elected representatives, your senators, your members of Congress, and email them to me. I did, as you asked, I did deliver them to each and every office, and you have become more than just a philosophical supporter of the end of mountaintop removal in Appalachia. You are now actively in the fight, and I thank you. It was a very, very busy week. The days were simply packed. I was without internet at the hotel, and then I'll tell you why. I mean, I could check my email on my cell phone periodically, but couldn't do much better than that. I couldn't do much more than that. But, you know, when you check into a hotel room, they don't charge you extra for the towels. They don't charge you extra for, you know, TP. They don't charge you extra for television, unless, of course, you're buying, you know, those movies late at night. But for some reason or another, hotels have decided that internet access in the year 2009 is some sort of luxury that they should be able to charge extra for, just like, you know, the $18 bottle of mineral water in the honor bar. No, we did not stay in a hotel with an honor bar, I assure you. But I was there on somebody else's nickel, and I was not going to hang them out to dry to the tune of $50 per room for internet access for 4 days. So I apologize for being out of the loop, but that's why. And I was largely out of the loop on anything that I didn't see on Capitol Hill. But Agnes and I were there, and we took the whole fam-damily with us. And we did what we went to do. It was inspiring. It was exhausting. It was occasionally frustrating. But the hard work put forth by the folks that we were with was, as it always is, inspiring beyond belief. The hard work of, and I'm going to call their names, the hard work of J.W. Randolph and Stephanie Pistello and Lenny Calm to get all this set up in advance for us so that we could then do our hard work was nothing if not inspiring. And it was indeed inspiring. So that is what we were doing. We drove up Monday. We did some briefing and teaching and training Monday night for those who had never done this stuff before. And then Tuesday we hit the ground running, and we worked congressional offices and administration offices Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then when we were done on Thursday, hot, tired, and exhausted, we climbed back in the vehicle and came home. And you know what? I found out something. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there is no way to get out of Washington, D.C. without eventually parking your car in a lane on an interstate somewhere. At least as far as I could tell. So, that... But suffice to say, we pulled in here at midnight last night, which was not bad time, all in all. And we probably took a little longer getting home because I can't. It drives me. It's like some sort of tick, if you will. It drives me crazy
to go somewhere and drive past history and not stop and soak a little bit of it in. And so we this time I went home via a different route because it occurred to me that I might cut a few miles off, and I think I did. And we wound up driving past the battlefields for Spotsylvania Courthouse, Chancellorsville, and the Wilderness. And what a magnificent drive that was. And I did it because I thought of me at about the same age that Ferg is now, and how even though my parents were traveling on a much different and much more important mission, they found time to stop and show me historical sites when I was his age. And so Ferg has seen, the girls were asleep in the vehicle, but Ferg has seen, at least seen the Chancellorsville battlefield and has come home and begun to research it so that he can understand what happened there. I'm one of those people that can't go to a Civil War battlefield without getting a little choked up. But what a trip it was from the beginning to the end. You've heard me talk in I'll try to work this chronologically, but there's no guarantee. There's so much stuff to be gotten into. I gotta cram a week's worth of not talking into 3 hours tonight? Jiminy, this may be the mother of all filibobsters. But no, your calls are as always welcome at 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. BobKincaid@gmail.com. Learn it, know it, use it. But on the way there, I couldn't resist pulling off of Interstate 64 at an exit in West Virginia called Sam Black Church. And you've heard me mention Sam Black in the past. He is one of my forebears. He is, he was the brother to one of my multi-great-grandmothers. And as we stood there on the stoop of the church, a lady came over from next door and let us in. And there hanging on the wall is a portrait of Sam Black.